Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Punch Kick Choke Chat. My name is Sean Benson. I'm one of your hosts. I'm so excited to be here, 8:30 p.m. Toronto time. And I'm here with my senseis, Sensei Randy Dauphin, Sensei Nicolas Suino, and Hanshi Gary Legacy. And we have a bit of a treat or not treat for you tonight. So our guest tonight is Chris, the Polish Hammer Horodecki, but he's busy and we did not want to miss our opportunity to have our conversation with him. So he's going to pop in about a half an hour. And when he gets here, we're pivoting right to him. But until then, we're not going to do our intro for him yet. I'm going to throw it to Sensei Dauphin. He's going to tell you what our treat or not treat is going to be for tonight.
Thanks, Sean. So we've decided that Sean's usually hosting. He's leading this. He's doing a great job with that. But he's got lots of great ideas on martial arts and good thoughts. And he often doesn't get a chance to share them. So we just thought at the beginning of this, we'd hit him with some questions. And everybody would get to hear what his thoughts are. And if you want to send in a question, you can still send them in the way you normally do. We're not going to have tons of time here, but if we can get to them, we will. But to jump right in, I think we're going to start with the 10 questions. We're going to ask Sean to answer his 10 questions that he asked. So tonight you're going to get the 10 questions twice. You're going to get them. Sean's going to answer them. And then the champ, Chris Horodecki, is going to answer them too. So first thing, we're going to go since me, then since Sasuna, we're just going to go back and forth. So first question, Sean, be careful how you answer. What is the most effective move in your martial arts arsenal?
I got two. The most effective move, if I'm doing anything, is my reverse punch. We know this. It's the one that works all the time, and it's the one I want to use. But I will say that in 30 plus years of people coming at me, my stillness has always diffused this. Standing still when guys think they're going to make something happen and nothing happening has led them every single time to walk away. So having the reverse ready, but not needing to use it because of stillness has been my most effective move on the street.
Moker, I motherfucker, silent thunder. Just, you know, you have a question too.
Here's another question you need to answer very carefully, Sean. Who is the most influential martial artist in your life?
There's no doubt on this one. It's Sensei Randy Dauphin. You know, 3 years into my training, after Hanshi Legacy changed my life, quite literally changed my life, made me a different person already, walking a different path. I said, what do I do? I'm leaving Western. And he pointed at Sensei Dauphin. He said, go train with Randy. He'll be able to teach you everything I can. There's no end to what that relationship has done for me. And that was 27 years ago. I've known him for 30, but been his direct student for 27. And all my thinking, whether we agree or not, it's all been shaped by him, and all my movement, whether I move like him anymore or not, is all been shaped by him. And it's the greatest gift I could imagine in the martial arts. Everything else comes second.
Thanks, Benz. So question number three is your chance to say Sensei Legacy. Who is the most influential martial artist of all time and why?
Yeah, it's Hanshi Gary Legacy. I've thought about this so much because I've asked this so much, and I think that I am going to say Kano. And I think I'm going to say Kano from what I've learned on this show, because not only we know how many martial artists have walked through the judo halls, like 90% of our guests started in judo if they're over a certain age. So all those guests on our show who might not have stuck with judo came through Kano. And we know the jiu-jitsu came out of Kano as far as it went to Brazil. And then that led to Royce Gracie. And then that led to the MMA basically changing the face of what stand-up and ground game looks like as a combination. So I'm going with Higuro Kano.
Love it.
What excites you the most about the next 5 years of your training?
You know, I said this right before COVID, and then COVID hit. And then I've been really busy as an actor, which has been glorious, but actually competing. I feel like I'm just entering the best phase of my martial arts. I feel like I've prepared nicely for the next 20 years. And I want to compete in jiu-jitsu. I want to compete and stand up as much as I possibly can, given my schedule and how much I need to keep my face somewhat reasonable for camera. And I don't care if I get bruises or broken noses. I just can't get them while I'm shooting because it screws up continuity. So anyways, competing in the next 5 years.
You know, I like that answer, Benz. And one thing I would build on that is I know Sense Legacy said this often that most people retire before they hit their peak. I know for me, like, I feel like I did really good and I stopped when I was around, you know, 32, 33, but I probably would have been a little bit better for a little bit longer had I stuck with it. So I think I like your goal of competing for the next 5 years. And I think you'll do really well over the next 5 years.
Thanks, Sensei.
Yeah. So I get the next question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you get there? And I know you do believe that heaven exists. So let's hear what you have to say.
Yeah, it's real simple. Your mom's right over there. Fucking hang with mom for a while. Yeah. I miss her so much. Yeah.
She's up there with my mom. So whoever gets there first.
Yeah, I want to see her. Everything else comes second.
Right. Nice.
I don't know, this may be the most loaded set of 10 questions that we've ever asked, right? Because none of them are asked without some context or framing. I don't know if I need to say this, but I'll just ask the question. So who's your favorite film or TV star in martial arts movies, whether or not they actually train?
Yeah, I've got two for this one, because again, I've thought about this one so much. Modern day is Keanu. I just think those John Wick movies are next level. And I think even the way he shoots, the way he moves that gun, but also going back to Point Break, like his action in that movie is incredible. And he doesn't do a ton of martial arts, but he gets, you know, he's beat up a little bit. But no, I'm such a massive fan of his. And when you listen to interviews about how dedicated, like training 8 hours a day with the Machados, doing the Terran Tactical, like he doesn't fake 99% of that stuff. And the guy's in his 50s and he's just killing it take after take. So that's my favorite. But honestly, growing up, it's straight up Sylvester Stallone because of Rocky. Rocky IV was my favorite action movie growing up, even more than The Karate Kid. And when I think about him as an action star, as a kid, I don't know who shaped me more. Like Arnold is a hero, but Stallone as an actual physical on-camera guy.
Love that. You're the first Stallone guy. And I don't know why you're the first Stallone guy. He should have been mentioned before.
I watched the scene. Sorry, Sensei.
Oh, you were actually the first one to mention Arnold as well, who also should have easily been mentioned before.
Yeah, I sent my acting students the scene in the original Rocky where he's lying there and he says, I don't think I can do it. I don't think I can beat him. I don't think I can win. I just want to go the distance. And I sent it to my students and I said, there's no Rocky without his doubt. If he doesn't doubt himself, we can't relate to him. If he doesn't doubt himself, he's Superman without kryptonite. And it's not interesting. But as a man who's not sure he can win, we're all now Rocky.
Love it. I guess it's me next. So in all time, living or dead, if you could train with anybody, who would be that person that you would want to go train with?
I am not trying to score brownie points. You. I'm sorry. There's no other answer. Look, if I can't choose you three, then it would be Matsumura. I would want to, my historian would want to stand opposite and be told what to do by him and do it with him. But I don't have enough time with you three, and I never will. I live too far away from you. And like my next 2 weeks, I'm going to LA and I love my life and my career. But I don't have enough time in front of my senseis. So it's you three, 1,000%.
You stole that from me.
It's a great student.
I think about GSP, like I'd love to train with GSP, but I wouldn't take an hour with him, like in trading the time we're gonna get. Cause also what we have builds, that's just a one-off. And one-offs are okay, but I'm less interested in them the older I get.
Love it.
If everyone in the world could have the greatest benefit that you've gotten from martial arts training, whether they train or not, what would that be?
I pray that I have this from martial arts. Humility. I came into martial arts the same way I swooped into ballet, the same way I swooped into everything. Don't you know who I think I am? and losing in martial arts, getting choked out, getting knocked down, getting the wind knocked out of me by someone who I'm looking at. It's the humility of the art itself, alone in a park. And my whole thing with humility is it's not being quiet or shy. It's being right-sized. We're good at what we're good at, and we need to learn what we need to learn. And yeah, I hope I've learned that. And I would love if everybody else, again, I think I'm so at it, but I'm better than nothing at it. And I hope everybody gets a version of that, at least saying I might be wrong and I might need to learn a little more about X, whatever that X is.
Love it. And you know, Sean, that the last two questions come as a pair. Man, I just feel like Sean Benson. This is so fun.
Right? The 10 questions are good, right?
Yeah, yeah. The next two questions come as a pair. Mm-hmm. What do you consider your greatest achievement and what do you consider your greatest regret?
They're linked. Getting and staying sober. The battle of that was long and seemed endless and dark and like it might not ever end. I know on some level addiction, something, you know, you have to live with, but the darkness has been gone for a long time. You know, and if you know anything about sobriety, I don't take a lot of credit for that. I take credit for the surrender, stopping believing it's a willpower thing. That's a really complicated thing to go, yeah, I can't beat this actually. Left to my own devices, I can't stay sober. Took a long time, and I'll never be able to describe to someone else like what 4 a.m. feels like when your soul's splitting. And I hope no one else has to feel it, but I know many have. My greatest regret, I didn't choose to be an addict. So saying it's a regret is weird. But how much real training time I gave up between age 25 and 32. You know, and then even once I got sober, like I didn't just click back immediately into a great routine. It took a sec. But really, that is my greatest regret. Like, I don't know, I didn't buy Bitcoin in 2010. I didn't know what Bitcoin was, but I did know what training was. I did know what the benefit was. And I got off track. I still trained maintenance, but I never got better. I didn't compete in the way I could have and max out my joints being at their best the way I could have. And I do regret that. And I know some of our older guests say they have no regrets, and I get it, but I don't feel that. There's some days where I'm like, fuck, I blew that decade a bit, and you can't get it back. And you can't train as hard at age 48 as you can at 28, or at least not recover as quickly. That's the way I'd put it. So I wish I could have that decade back for just sheer two-a-days, never say die, but I'm doing it now.
That's your 10 questions, Sean. I'm so happy we got the chance to, you got the chance to answer your own questions that you ask everybody else. A question did come in from Mark Altomar, and we'll ask you in a second. But first, I know Sense of Legacy has a question for you. And so we're going to let Sense of Legacy ask you that question, and then we'll get to Mark Altomar's. Thanks. Time permitting.
Yes. Just a couple of things about John is, you know, right now he's been working a long time, and you just sort of notice that when students get into the higher dance, they stay there for a longer time. It takes longer to achieve. Really, the word is understand. You do this stuff over and over and over again, and then you have to discover it. That takes more time. So he's a bit of a plateau right now, but I can see things changing for him in the near future as far as rather than just being sort of with the lower belts. I can see maybe getting a six dan or something to that effect. Of course, that's all up to you. Okay, so the question I want to ask.
We usually collaborate on that stuff, Sense of Legacy. Usually you and I collaborate on that stuff, so it's not just up to me.
Yeah, okay. So what I'm asking you is, do you believe that new styles can be accepted in this modern time, like now, as opposed to the old days where basics were all the same? It goes your route, they look a little different, but there's still high blocks and low blocks, etc. But the very big difference in there is a very big difference in application and in proper use. A lot of times when you watch some people who have an inferior club, and not could be anybody's, and they just don't do the blocks properly. They're just half-ass done, so to speak. So looking at that, that using the proper blocks and everything back in those times, they also got to, defend themselves by way of actually applying these. So do you think that there are new ways out there that can apply the same techniques as all the styles that we went before?
I think there's, again, it's not really two answers. I think yes, because a style is just a combination of moves, right? Like a style is a coalescence of a way of approaching something when I think about it. And so the style isn't going to introduce a new body part, right? So, my fiance is doing Muay Thai, and then I was talking about elbows. She never did karate with me long enough. She's like, wait, there's elbows in karate? I was like, there's so many elbows in karate. There's so many knees in karate. There's so many throws and takedowns in karate. And so the idea that even someone wouldn't know those exist, that has nothing to do with karate itself. It just has to do with the fact that the style of karate, like what you're talking about, maybe a lesser dojo, doesn't know that that's in there or practice it. So then if somebody shows up with a new thing, Rick Doe, some dude named Rick goes, hey, this is a new thing. I think that could be valid.
Why are we talking on Rick?
Rick Doe rocks. Rick Doe works. But if he shows up and goes, hey, I'm the new MMA guy, and I'm going to win everything and I'll prove it, I don't think that's impossible. It would be a way of thinking that combines how our body already moves since like Greeks are wrestling and punching each other on the battlefield. And the thing I think about with jiu-jitsu, where you see things accelerate so fast because it's newer, I'll take Jean-Jacques Machado. Like somebody will come in and be like, hey, what about this inverse, Barambolo? And he's like, show me. And they'll show him and he'll go, oh, yeah. He's been doing it since the 80s. He just didn't call it that. And he's not building a whole singular system around it. But that person is. And then they're doing well with it in tournaments or whatever. So I think that there's room for new styles, but I don't think they include much new under the sun, just a new combination or way of approaching it. But that can be super effective.
I like that answer. I sent Cicerino a picture this week. And it was a very historic picture of, I don't even know what it is, like the Last Supper or something, but there's some philosopher, probably a Greek philosopher, and he's writing something down and it says judo. And then there's another person who's like turned away looking over their shoulder and it says BJJ. Like they're just copying all the stuff that was already invented by judo, right? Yeah. Like, which I do BJJ. I'm not hacking on it. I'm just, right. I think it's an example of what Sense Legacy was talking about.
I think so too. And the other thing I think, and I think about this a lot, because Alden and I, we really have a mandate down here in Toronto about there's that period where people aren't using this in a real way. And until 1993, when the UFC showed up and people went, oh, you're basically in a street fight minus eye poking or biting. Like that was the first UFC rules. You could hammer someone in the groin. You literally have guys hammering each other in the groin. So almost anything went. And so I think, like, if you watch 1962, there's a video of guys having Hong Kong rooftop street fights. There aren't a lot of videos of this, but it looks like two yellow belts fighting. It's not great. And this is like this mythic, Bruce Lee and his rooftop street fights. And, I love trolling Bruce Lee. I love Bruce Lee, but people treat him like the second coming. And I'm like, those rooftop fights, they don't look good by modern day standards because people are like, he'd beat anyone today. And I think so much got lost when it stopped being a true Ude Kakushin, a true you could die from this. And I think a lot of those fights in Okinawa would have been really scrappy and hit the ground. And a lot of dirt in eyes and grabbing and tearing and headbutts. And because we don't fight that way anymore in the dojo, and I think that's a good thing, but I think the benefit of something like the UFC is it's brought us back around to going, oh yeah, we need to see where our arts did have this, because they did, assuming they existed back when you could still fight with them for real.
Sean.
Yes.
Question came in from Mark Altomar.
Mm-hmm.
And his question for you is, I'm going to answer part of it for him.
Okay.
Do you ever think you'll do martial arts as an actor? Do you want to? And cool. So I'll let you answer both questions, but I just want to say, Mark, go Google, I am Canadian, and you're going to see Sean Benson doing that commercial. See an American person making fun of the way Canadians talk, and then you're going to see Sean Benson hockey jersey him and punch him in the head. So he's already done martial arts as an actor. But anyway, answer that question, Sean. Do you think you're going to be the next Keanu Reeves?
I don't know if we've talked about this, Sensei, but when I went and auditioned for that commercial, and I hadn't done any work on television yet, so I had no like name. I was just another guy, and he had to go from being the nice guy to the mad guy. And I played you, Sensei Dauphin. I literally said, well, I'm going to flick the switch the way he does. So I went from the smile to the feral and booked the part. And then when I booked it, the wardrober says, yeah, I remember the director saying, I don't know how that guy goes from nice to ready to kill like that, but that's why I got the job. So that was pretty good. Mark, thanks for the question. I absolutely want to use my martial arts. There's an episode of Killjoys where I did a whole fight scene with an actress named Hannah John Kamen, who's in the Marvel Universe and super awesome. And that was pretty good. It wasn't long enough and it wasn't like a full action role, but my character was a bit like Rucker Hauer in Blade Runner. So there was some cool action stuff there. There's been little bits along the way, but no, I haven't got to play it the way I want to. And I actually wrote a movie that I'm working with producers to get made right now. And that's an action role. Now, the movie's an $18 million movie, and I don't know if you know what that means, but it means that I'm not famous enough to get $18 million right now. So the reality is I might become a writer on a movie where someone else gets to throw those punches and kicks, and that would be a great win for me. But the bigger win would be to do the punches and kicks. So I'm always trying to do it. I always want to do it. Whenever there's stunty stuff, they're always like, oh, thank God you can do this. We don't really need your stunt person. But that full action fighting your way through a movie, can't wait, would love to do it.
I can't. And I know Robert put the I Am Canadian commercial in the chat, but just in case anybody's not following the chat, Randy, you broke up a little bit when you were saying it. So it's just I Am Canadian, right, is the name of the commercial.
Correct.
And I want to say this about Mark Altomar. If I'm not mistaken, he recently went through some work on his knee, and that is one of the steps that's going to bring him back to training at JMAC. So he can confirm or deny this rumor, but these are the things I'm hearing.
Great. Tell him to ping me if I can help with my knee experience.
Fabulous point. Yep.
You know, that was my last year's journey, and we're on the other side of it now.
Mm-hmm.
1 week ago today, on the mend. That's what he just put in the group chat.
Nice. Nice. I know he's got one more hurdle, which I will not reveal, but once he gets through those, we will see him back on the mats of JMAC. Excited about that.
I mean, one more hurdle. It must suck to be like late in life and have to be circumcised, but.
Yeah. And apparently he's against freezing. It's against his.
Well, they said that they needed a larger operating room for him. So.
We love that guy. That's why we can joke about him like that.
100%.
Yeah. Anybody? I definitely have some more questions. So, Sunu, do you have a question for Benz that you want to ask him, or a memory or a thought? Or
in the martial arts arena, young Sean, what's the scariest moment you ever faced?
Oh, wow. That's a great question.
We should go around the horn on that question.
Yeah, the scariest moment I faced in the martial arts arena. You know, it's interesting, okay? I do talk about these situations, like, for example, when the biker who had his two biker buddies behind, and I'm talking like martial arts in the real world. I've talked about that kind of story. That's happened more than once. I've never felt fear in those situations. I feel a bit of freeze. You know, my fight or flight goes freeze first, but then I come back to the moment and there's no fear. And it's, I think I have a bit of sociopathy and that's fine. I like it. Like a psychopathy. And I'm like, great. If this is happening, I'm in. So those weren't scary. Honestly, it would have to be early days fighting Sensei Dauphin where I didn't know what was happening. Like I didn't understand what the hits to the head meant or the hits to the body meant. And I was just genuinely confused while my body was dealing with a response of being hit in a way I'd never been hit. So I was getting like my central nervous system was getting rattled. My sense of accomplishment or achievement was utterly destroyed. Like my ego was laid bare. And I was brought to the verge of tears, which I would never express because I didn't feel comfortable doing that at that point. So that's almost worse because now I'm vibrating, trying to hold up something I don't need to hold up. And I don't understand if I'm supposed to be hitting back harder or less hard or giving up or fighting. So it's just the utter confusion from basically what I'll call purple belt to halfway through second Q, first Q. Pretty afraid to fight every time, but there were really specific moments of genuine animal fear. Like I don't understand what's happening. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And my central, it really is that central nervous system where it's like, I've been hit and my ego's dead and I don't know what to do. And that's real fear for me. I don't think he's going to abuse or anything, but my body in that moment has no frame of reference.
Oh, come on, Sean. I was an odd head back then. we're going to go around the horn since soon.
Hunchy Legacy. So not real world fights, but in the martial arts arena, you know, whether it be training in the dojo or training in a competition, what was the scariest moment you remember?
Okay. It's going to sound a bit weird, but I don't think I was ever scared, not scared. So I froze, but, the time I worried the most was when I was a green belt. I was 21 years old, and my sensei put me in front of Wally Slope. Mm-hmm. He's go out there and fight Wally Slope. It's like Sean was saying, I didn't know what to do. What are you going to do? You're a green belt, and there's the greatest Canadian fighter that we know of. So that was probably it. Well, and I also got a pilot's license that night after he kicked me around. I was in the air more often than on the ground.
And it's Loki's birthday today. So
happy birthday, friend of the program.
Yes. Yeah.
Randy, not in the real world, but in the dojo or in a tournament arena, what's the scariest moment you've ever faced?
It's funny you say that, Sensei Shino, because in the real world, I don't think there's a lot of time to be afraid. Like when I've had my couple of little dust offs and scrapes, like there wasn't really any fear. There was just reacting, but there's time in the dojo to be nervous about what's going to happen. And Legacy Showrunner is a tough dojo to grow up in. So I remember after I got my yellow belt feeling really high, like, and since Legacy used to always come in after, I didn't know this at the time, but he'd come in and fight everybody who had graded. And I remember after I got my yellow belt, you know, going back to the dojo feeling like, I'm like, okay, I'm a yellow belt, man. Like I did this, I'm something now, right? And I remember I was, in the hall, we hadn't even gone in yet, and kind of stretching. And Sensei Legacy comes in, and he's dressed already, which normally he wouldn't have been. He'd normally put his stuff on in there. And he's got this black glove tied onto his right hand. And as he walks past, like a black, like heavy bag, and only on one side. Because back then, we just didn't wear too much equipment, both things, right? And because Sensei punched that maple tree, he always wore that black glove on his wrist. And he walks by me, and he goes, "You ready to fight the old man tonight?" And I mean, let's be honest, at that time he was 42 or something like that, right? So he wasn't an old man, but he goes, "You ready to fight the old man tonight?" And I went, "Oh yeah, like no problem." Cause I thought he was talking about Kenny Ibu Suzuki. I was gonna make me fight Kenny. And I was like, "Yeah, I'm good." Right. Not that Kenny was a bad fighter. Like I had fought him a bunch of times. And then this other guy, John Ryan, who's a black belt in our club, he's next to me and he goes, "He means you're fighting him." I was instantly afraid. Like I gotta be honest, I was instantly afraid. I was like, "What in the hell did I do? Like, why is he gonna beat me up? Like, what did I do?" And then of course after, like, he fought me very nicely and hit me a couple times hard, but he wasn't in any way brutal. But I do remember, stands out in my mind, just being afraid in that moment. And what Sean said, because I just didn't know what was going to happen, mm-hmm. right? Like I didn't understand why I was going to have to fight the sensei. I wasn't excited about it at all. Later, I came to become excited about it. In that moment, like, I was like, okay, maybe I should just go home, right? So that's mine. How about you, Sensesino? Do you got one?
I do have one. In Yokohama at the Kanagawa Dojo, depending on the night, there were big fight nights when a lot of different athletes would show up. And in those days, I think it was Thursday nights when all the college teams would show up and the guys were just going at it. And I was watching this one guy and he looked like he was about 190 pounds. He had this Uchimata that was just ridiculous. Every time he threw somebody with it, his nose would just about touch the floor and his foot would just about touch the ceiling. And, you know, I think I heard one of you guys say that Chuck Liddell, right, has this, or maybe it was Joe Rogan, right, who said he's like a leopard seal. Like there's a moment when he flips that switch, there's no humanity left in his eyes. Mm-hmm. This guy wasn't trying to hurt anybody, but he was just doing giant judo. I found out later he was the all Kanagawa Prefecture high school judo champion in his weight division. And so he was doing big, strong judo and not worried about anybody. But I didn't feel like I could turn him down. You know, he walked over to me and he goes, "Hey, let's go." I'm like, "Well, here I am, right? I got a judo gi on. What am I going to do?" And unlike what you guys said, it wasn't that I didn't know it was coming. I knew exactly it was coming. I was getting my ass launched. and I realized after about a minute after being launched three times that it was unsafe. It was just, you know, I mean, I'm really good at taking falls, but just the volume, the speed, the size difference, everything else, it was just unsafe. I knew if I stayed in and I got begged off after like a minute. It wasn't really that scary until I bowed and started. And once it was over after a minute, it wasn't scary anymore. But in that 1 minute, it was just like, holy shit, I don't know what's about to happen. I'm going to get hurt. You know, it was just like, it was like jumping off a bungee cord, right? You know, the whole time nothing was in my hands. It was a very scary moment. When I stepped off after bowing to him, one of the other senseis came over to me and he said, "That's probably a bad combination. You shouldn't train with that guy." So that was my favorite, my scariest moment.
Nice. Okay. I'm going to do another around the horn. And I'm going to take one of the 10 questions and I'm going to frame it a little bit differently. Right. Who could you train with, living or dead, of all time? I'm going to give it. It can't be the people on this call. Right. It can't be any of the four of us. You're allowed to give three answers. You're allowed to say three people, living or dead, all time, that you would train with. And so, Benz, we're coming to you last because we're ranting you most tonight. So, since, you know, you got three people.
I need a minute. Is there any more framing? Do I have to care, like, what part of history or for different purposes that I'm training with them? Or
I'll go first, right?
All right. That would be helpful.
I'll go first and people can think about it. One for me would be Muhammad Ali. I fucking love to train with Muhammad Ali. Right? Like I'd love to spend a day with that guy and train with that guy. He's for sure stands out for me. If it's not people on this call, he'd be number one. Obviously the founder of Shoriner Matsumura is one that stands out for me. Like, I don't think I need to articulate it too much. And then the other one, I'm going to steal somebody else's answer because from the time that that Sensei Mustard said it, I thought about it. I'd love to train with Miyamoto Musashi. Like, he would be one that would be like stand out. So for me, the three are Muhammad Ali, Matsumura, and Musashi. And interestingly, their names all start with M. And that wasn't planned. Okay. So who wants to go next? Sensei Suina or Sensei Legacy? Just chip in.
Who else are you going to pick? Like, you pick.
You used them up.
I gave you guys the opportunity to go first.
Yeah. Well, basically, you're the same persons. The one I may add to that would be Tosin. But other than that, as you know, those are my choices. I would say Matsumura would be my first choice. And Ali, because he's like a superhero himself. And Itosu and Musashi. Could I ask if Sensei Suino ever heard of Udaigiri Ichiya?
I've heard the name. I don't know anything about that person.
Okay.
So, Sensei Suino, do you have you ruminated? Do you have three?
Yeah, I'm the guy in the at the restaurant table who makes everybody else order first.
Talk slowly while you think. Right.
Okay. So, Miyamoto Musashi, 100%. Trained with the guy. I would do that, you know, obviously you can't, but that greatest, you know, historical swordsman of all time. And then Yamaoka Teshu, I've talked about before, my personal hero, a great statesman, politician, a samurai, a great swordsman, and probably the most extraordinary calligrapher who ever existed. Just a personal hero of mine, Yamaoka Teshu. And there's great stories about him, you know, fighting kendo with people and just driving him out of the dojo and doing all kinds of craziness. He's also the guy that, you know, walked to Narita and back overnight to prove it could be done, and had a sake drinking contest with the most famous sake guy and all this other stuff. Just lived a big life. And then I'm going to go number three with Mifune Kyuzo, who was the greatest technician who ever come out of the Kodokan, the first 10th dan that Kano ever awarded, and who created a ton of judo techniques, including kind of my favorite judo kata, two-person kata, called Nage Ura no Waza, which is a bunch of defenses to the classical judo stand-up kata. So I'm going Miyamoto Musashi, Yamaoka Teshu, and Mifune Kyuzo.
Benz, you got like to be
yeah,
quick.
Like, I'll be real quick. So I'm going to bring it into like people I'd really want to spend some time with. And I'm avoiding the fact that I agree with all your answers. Hicks and Gracie is one of my heroes. So prime Hicks and Gracie, I would want to spend time on the mats with and stand up. I want to spend real time with Khabib. I want him to show me everything he knows and all his tricks. But also, you know, I want to do this. Only if he'd agree to move around and trade hands is Bruce Lee.
Mm-hmm.
I want to train with him and stand opposite him and go, "You weren't within a foot of me, man." Like, I want to troll him. If you watch that San Diego, I think it is, video from the 60s, the black and white, where the guy doesn't block in time, he throws his punch this far from the guy's face. If you slow the video down, he's not even near the guy. So the guy doesn't perceive that he needs to block yet. So it's not like he's illegitimate, but there's so much trickery that people refuse. And I know he's legit. I just want to feel it and then go yes or no. So yeah, it's a little personal vendetta of mine because there's no real fight record for him.
Okay, Benz, I like it. So the champ is here. Chris Hordecki, I see his Robert's gonna turn his camera on. I'll do my intro and you'll jump in with a question right away. Hey Chris, how's it going?
What's up, guys? Sorry for the little lateness of the arrival, but work was needed to be done and training just finished. So here we are. Glad to be here.
Amazing. I'm going to do a quick intro of you, champ, and then Sean Benson is going to jump in with a question for you. So what I want to let everybody know, if you don't know who Chris Hordecki is, he's a Polish-Canadian mixed martial artist who began his training when he was 13 years old. He's a native of London, Ontario, and his contact fighting career started when he was 18 years old, just after his 18th birthday, and that was with a TKO victory. He holds a professional career record of 30 matches with 21 wins, and he has competed for both the WEC, IFL, that's when I started watching IFL, Bellator, TKO, Major League, MMA, and a bunch of other, like, Palace Fighting Championships. He's fought everywhere, anybody who wanted to fight him. Chris, along with Mark Hominick, who's been on this show as well, and with Sam Stout, they're the founding members of Adrenaline in London, Adrenaline MMA. It's a professional mixed martial arts school and athletic training facility that specializes in enhancing all levels of athletic performance and personal fitness. Listen, I took an opportunity. I was recently at the butcher shop I got invited down there by Scott Watson, one of our black belts, to do some BJJ. And I saw Chris there. I recognized him right away. I said to my daughter, that's Chris Hordecki. And she's like, I don't know who that is, Dad. So I quickly told her who he was. And before I left, I just asked him, would you like to come on Punch Kick Choke Chat? We'd love to have you on. And yeah, he wanted to. A couple of things I want to say is, when he was at the butcher shop, he was accessible. He wasn't like on the sidelines being a superstar. He was on the floor rolling around with white belts, purple belts, brown belts, whoever wanted to get in there with him, he was in there doing it. And it was really clear. When I was watching, it was really clear he was on a different level than everybody else, but he was really nice to everybody and they were all happy to be rolling with him. If you don't know what the IFL is, you should go look at it. I really wish that was still going, because it was outstanding. It was a team fighting event. I loved it. And listen, he was 18 when he was in there. And I want to be polite, but he still looks young now. He is young. He's younger than all of us, but he looked like he was like 14 or 15. And I remember seeing him come out and just thinking, like, who's this young person in here? And then the next thing I knew, like, people's jaws were on the other side of the mat as he was knocking them out. So if it sounds like I'm a fan, I am. And I want to say that some of my really favorite fights was the two fights he had with Bart. Palazowski, I might have said that wrong, but he's a Polish American. And I remember the first time they fought, I looked at Chris. He looked so young. Bart was like heavily tattooed. And I just thought, where is this going to go? And it went in Chris's favor. And I'm really excited to have him on here. Super pumped to have him on here. And I think everybody's going to learn a lot. So Champ, thanks so much for coming on. Really happy.
Thank you for the warm introduction. It's been, a hell of a journey, and it's a pleasure to be here. Ready to talk to you guys. You know, I heard great things from Leo Laux. I spoke with him today and he was quite excited about, the interview you guys had with him and having him on board, and Mark Hominick. And, we reconnected at the butcher shop, myself and you, and we didn't really train together, but, you know, we got to be instructed by one of the best, you know, George Brito, one of the top jiu-jitsu practitioners in the country, and, you know, right directly from the Gracie lineage. And, it's a pleasure to be here, guys. Thank you so much. I heard great things about the podcast, and I'm very honored to be here, and I'm proud that you guys are, you know, keep the martial arts, you know, relevant and talking about and accessible. There's so much more than just training, you know, involved with martial arts. It's a community, it's a team, it's a way of life. And, people, when they talk about it, they hear about it, they just become more accessible and knowledgeable of what martial arts is all about. So thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, Chris, Sean Benson, who's going to lead most of the talking, he's a purple belt with George. So with Professional Burrito, so he knows him really well as well. Sean, take it away, man.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, I love training with him. And now I'm training in Toronto and in Etobicoke in his new spot. It's so great to have you here with us, Champ. So the question I love to ask everybody is, what was it like for you growing up, and what brought you into your first dojo or fight club?
Yeah, I've been a lifelong martial artist. I started karate, Shorin Ryu Karate. John Marshall was my sensei in London, Ontario, and Mike Bernardo at the time. I was 6 years old. And, you know, just a kid looking for an outlet, a kid looking for, you know, a way to burn some steam and tire him out with my folks pushing me. And I always loved it. But I was more recreational. You know what I mean? I was a kid and it was never like I wasn't like super into it until around the age of, until I hit double digits, around like 11, 12. Then I started to just really dive in. So around that age, you know, the hormones start kicking in, testosterone starts kicking in. And that's the thing, like, you know, the boys around that age, they just skyrocket, right? And the development and the mindset just changes completely, where they go from doing something because they are kind of forced into it. And then they're like, no, this is what I love. And that's kind of what happened with me. So I was, you know, going full steam with karate, traveling. You know, we had like a travel team. We traveled through, you know, the US, you know, in upstate New York, Pennsylvania, all over Ontario competing, you know, in point karate. But around that age, 13 years old is when I met my trainer and, you know, my mentor, you know, Sean Tompkins, you know, God rest his soul. He did so much for myself, my teammates, my co-owners of our gym that we have, you know, and you know, we always honor him. And that's something that's very important. And that's something that, you know, we go back to martial arts, and it's honoring the people that have taught you, the people that have brought the martial arts, made it accessible to you. And that was someone that did. So I met Sean when I was 13. He was friends with John Marshall. And John was looking to implement a kickboxing program in the karate studio. And, you know, Sean started that. And that right around that time is when I met, we all started together training with Sean, was Mark Hominick and Sam Stout. And it was us with a few other people, and, you know, Nick Rondinelli, Alex Gasson. We were like the original group that started. And so we went from, you know, doing twice a week kickboxing classes at the Karate Dojo. And then shortly after, we added a Saturday class. Sean, he was running his own training facility in Tillsonburg, Ontario. He ran a karate, kickboxing, MMA facility. So we'd go on Saturdays and we would spar there from 2 days a week to three, which turned into, okay, an extra session on Sunday, 4 days a week. So at that point, you know, martial arts just became my life, my obsession. And I loved it. And it drove me, you know, to be the person who I am, because it, you know, it taught me discipline. It taught me, you know, respect, work ethic, life values that, you know, maybe martial arts isn't the only way to get these things, but damn sure they help, right? So
it's the only way for everyone on this call.
Exactly. I'm not saying everyone who doesn't do martial arts isn't a great person, but it definitely helps. And so at that point, 13 years old, trained with Sean. 14, I had my first kickboxing fight when I was 13. And then 14, I actually had my first mixed martial arts experience. I competed at a Pancration tournament in Toronto. I won that. Pancration being, you know, the one of the original founding Olympic sports, which was open hand, open hand strikes, closed fist to the body. So it was wild, you know, competing. Oh, I competed with another youth, which was, he was maybe 16 at the time. So I won that, that tournament. And then shortly after, I did actually my first MMA Pancration fight, which was in the Hammond Civic Center in Chicago, Illinois, which was pretty wild.
Yeah, that's a big jump up, eh?
Yeah, I got to fight in an actual, and there was a pro card. that was taking place in the Hammond Civic Center, which is a very, you know, it's a staple in Chicago. And I don't know if you've traveled and trained in Chicago, but, you know, crossing that Indiana border, it was like Chicago was kind of on the, you know, on the cusp. Not everything was legal over there. So they would cross in Indiana, which was not too far away. So I fought over there. I won my match by rear naked choke. On that same card, Stephen Bonner fought Terry Martin. So if you guys remember that name in the UFC. So that was two fighters that later ended up fighting in both in the UFC. Stephen Bonner, you know,
yeah,
famous for his fight with Forrest Griffin.
Yeah.
And Terry Martin were on that card. I had the Master Grandmaster, Carlson Gracie, was in attendance there. So that was pretty cool, man. And I actually got to train with Carlson. My family being from Chicago, I got a chance to, an opportunity to train with him when I was around that age too. So, and visit his academy in downtown Chicago. So that was kind of the start of the MMA, the kickboxing. And then everything kind of just went from there, you know. And then shortly I actually turned pro. I missed my my high school prom to turn professional. So before that fight in TKO, I fought in the Ultimate Cage Warriors for Christoph Szyszynski. And I don't know if you guys remember, he was a teammate of mine with International Fight League, as well as in the UFC. He fought in the light heavyweight division. He had his own promotion in Winnipeg, Winnipeg, Manitoba. And I fought for him and got my first official professional mixed martial arts win, which was by doctor stoppage that day.
Right on. I just want to interrupt for a second. I know Sensei Dolphin has a question that he wants to open up some of this.
Yeah, I'm just curious, Chris. You know, honestly, like we've all been in this game for a long time, this art. Like all of us have been training for a long time. Some people like Sensei Legacy, like, you know, 55 years. You're very uncommon to be so young and walk into the ring. And I don't mean like most 18-year-olds wouldn't even go where you went to, let alone go in there and get people out of there the way that you did. Like, if you haven't watched Chris fight before, you need to go watch him fight. Like, this guy, the Hammer is a really good name for him. You don't want to get hit anywhere by him. When arguably you were much more immature than at 18, I'm not saying you weren't a mature 18-year-old, but you know, when you're going in there, was there any anxiety against fighting against grown men? Like, or were you just like, no, I don't care. Like, I'm going to get this done.
You know what? I think the younger you are, the more fearless you are. You know, you just, you've only been on this earth for so long. So you have no fear. You're not scared of anything. And you're, you know, like the world is your oyster. You know, when the older you get, different things come into the picture. You know what I mean? Then you have a partner or a spouse. There's bills to be paid, you know, car payments, mortgage payments, whatever it is, you know, things come into play with that. But honestly, like when I was like starting out, there was no fear, there was no nothing. It was mm-hmm. It was just battle. And that's what being and starting so young, it gives you, right? It gives you that sense of like, there's nothing you can do to me, right? That's like a privilege to start when you start so young, right? There's also other ways you can look at it. The older you get, you know what I mean, your body would be more developed. You know, there's no doubt about it. You know, taking headshots, taking trauma, the longevity of an athlete and a fighter's career is actually only so long. But I have no regrets in starting so young, and I think that's kind of gave me a pretty cool story. And allowed me to have the opportunities that I have today, and allowed me to have the facility and the students and the training partners and, you know, the brothers and sisters that I have now.
Love that answer.
So I actually want to jump into something. You know that you're sort of a grand martial artist here of Hanchi Legacy, because he gave Mike Bernardo his black belt.
Oh, that's cool.
And so you've even got some technique probably in you from the man on my screen right above you, which I always think is just so cool.
I think that's something that traditional martial arts and, you know, like jujitsu and like You know, like that's, it's so important, like that lineage and that passage of knowledge, you know. And I think like when MMA first, as of recent years, they kind of got away from that. You know what I mean? Everybody was, it was just a fight, but it's a lot more than just a fight. There is, you know, there is the lineage, there is the training, there's the respect, there is the passing of the knowledge and the growth of your system and your techniques, because that's what it means. You want to keep this alive. And I don't know if you guys ever seen, there was a video with my coach, Sean Tompkins. He made, and he spoke like, and I don't know where it was. He was at a seminar or at like a jiu-jitsu tournament or something like that. And he said like how, and this was literally the year he died, and was saying how important it is for him to be able to have his system continued, you know, through myself, through Sam, through Mark, and the knowledge and the teachings that he's passed on to us to be able to continue and move forward, because it would be such a shame if what he created and everything that he brought into our lives and into the, you know, other people's lives were just to die with him, right? And I think that's something we can proudly say, that we did continue what he did teach us.
You know, you just said something so beautiful, because our styles are really people, right? Like I remember writing my essay for my Shodan, and I said, I don't learn how to punch. I learn how my sensei punches, and he shows me there's no punch out in the air. There's the punch that a human shows me. And the way you talk about that with Sean, who I haven't seen what you're talking about, but I love that dedication. One of the questions I do always like asking, and it's funny because you're a really cool age to straddle like an older UFC that you'd have been coming up watching, because the younger guys don't necessarily look at classical arts as separate. They're looking at MMA as a whole.
Yep.
But you're that age where you're still looking at which what's your doorway in. So I guess my question for you is, as someone who moved into kickboxing and MMA so early, did you find your classical martial arts prepared you for that?
100%. But also the style was different back then. You know, you could get away with being more you know, grappler versus striker, even though it was MMA at that time,
right?
2005
right
onwards, and it wasn't, you know, just that, but there definitely was people walking into fights who really weren't that confident in their ground, or who really had no place being on their feet. So that gave people the you know, like the interesting fights that became, because people would, you know, see these stylistic matches, and they would see the grappler versus the striker, they would see the judoka, they would see certain styles that would be so strong. How you doing? Yeah, no problem. So just a few people still trailing out of here. But now it's really different, because everybody has to know everything. You really do. Of course, it's impossible not to favor a certain thing. Like that's, you know, we're humans. We pick favorites. We do something a little bit more, and you're going to develop in one style more than another. And that's what gives people the strengths that make them successful MMA people. But now it's not what it was. No longer is it grappler versus striker. It's MMA versus MMA.
Yeah. Sensei Suino, you wanted to go somewhere with this?
Hey, Champ, I got a question. You know, I've watched you whenever you've been on the internet or on TV, pretty much your whole career. I'm glad you took this question in this direction. I always thought that you fought in a karate front stance. Any truth to that?
That's how I started, man. That's how I started. You know what I mean? And it's going back to, you know, continuous sparring tournaments in Ontario definitely, you know, like the first style of kickboxing that I fought was above the waist. And all of us did that. So don't kid yourself. Like before there was K1 rules for Muay Thai, like we've all fought in these different styles, shoot boxing in Japan, but it was above the waist, you know, ISKA kickboxing in Illinois and Iowa and upstate New York. You know what I mean? That was the original style. So yeah, I would 100% agree that, you know, my stand up definitely is karate based.
You think that was just a set of reflexes you built, or was that intentional? Did you Did you kind of lean into that, front stance style fighting?
No, I believe that that's just kind of the way I trained, and the way that, you know, the style that from karate training mixed with Sean Tompkins's kickboxing system and the blending that together, you know, I think that's just created the version of who I am.
So talk us through, as you're starting to get into these competitions and you're starting to do well as a young dude, how you're moving through the different leagues, and give us a bit of your perspective. Like, Sensei Dofan talked about the IFL, Bellator is a huge name. Like, what was your experience with each of the fight promotions and, you know, cool takeaways or where you thought they maybe didn't do a good job, as much as you want to talk about that? Talk us through that next period where you move proper pro.
After fighting in Winnipeg, I fought for the TKO, which was, a big show, one of the top shows in the country in Canada when I started out. And then, made a reoccurrence later, many years later, with Stéphane Patry. But then I had won, I believe, 4 or 5 straight, and then got invited to participate in Boss Rutan's Los Angeles Anacondas team and be the lightweight there. So basically I had like a trial run where I was given a super fight versus Henzo Gracie black belt, Eric. See, there's so many fights we've had. It's been that long. Eric Owings, I think was his name, in Atlantic City, New Jersey, where I had fought for representing the Anacondas, Boss Rutan's team. Went out there, and I was maybe 2 or 3 weeks after my last TKO fight, and I went out there and I fought again, and I had won in the first round at the bell of the first round, and there were 4-minute rounds, so it was basically 3 minutes, 59 seconds of the first round, and I had won that fight by knockout, by head kick, and then just kind of the steamrolling from there. So yeah, I went on like a 12 fight win streak in the International Fight League. And then after that, I got signed with the World Extreme Cage Fighting organization. So I believe I did a few independent shows from there, which is always cool. I got to travel to some cool places, you know what I mean? I got to fight in Mississippi on the same card as Bob Sapp and Bobby Lashley.
Nice.
I was big Bob Sapp.
That was pretty wild, man. Like that
I
was.
Bet.
I was, 150 pounds, and then Bob Sapp sitting next to me, the size of the man. Like you felt like literally this guy could eat you if he had
the intent. Yeah.
So, no, I that was a cool experience, fighting in Mississippi, and then signed with the World Extreme Cage Fighting, which was the WEC. Later, conjoined with the UFC, so it was a sister company of the UFC, and it was. A great experience, going to all like, cause it was, a co-union with the UFC. So it was all together. You had the same staff, the same people. Burt Watson would walk the fighters to the ring. And it was a cool experience. You know what I mean? Got to do that. Fought Cowboy Cerrone over there. Surprisingly, they cut my contract, which, it's kind of a soft spot for me because that they put the UFC and the WC together after that card. They made it the merger into they dropped the WC. They cut my contract after that, which I was in a bit of a shock because people that I had beaten in the WC got to fight and in the UFC, and I never got that opportunity. But it is what it is. It is what it is from there. Fought for Bellator Fighting Championships, which was really cool experience. I got to do, I believe, 4 or 5 shows, mostly in Canada, between the casinos here in Canada, Casino Rama, Casino Windsor. And that was awesome. Great experience fighting for them at that time. I think it was before Coker. It was Bjorn Rebney was the president there, and it was a great show. you know, fought some big names over there. Marlon Sandro. Again, UFC veterans. So I fought my fair share of UFC veterans. Chris Saunders. So, you know, that was a really great experience fighting for them, for Bellator. I then also I got to fight on the first ever professional mixed martial arts show in Ontario, which was before the UFC at the Sky Dome at the Rogers Center.
Yeah, I remember that fight.
At Casino Rama, which was the Day of Reckoning, which was actually the first ever professional mixed martial arts card in Ontario, which myself and Jordan Main were the co-main events on that card.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Now this is your show, and because you started late, I don't want to spend much time on this, but I gotta ask. Baz Rutten's one of my guys. He's one of my favorite martial artists who's ever. You got any Baz stories that are quick and fun? Did you dig him? Did you get along with him?
Man, Boss is the best. Boss is the greatest, man. He,
I'm so glad to hear it.
He was, you know, such a ball of energy and constant energy and what a beast. Even at his age, you know, I was at his last fight when he fought War. It was his last fight. He made a comeback fight, and it was in LA. And I got to go there with the team, with the Anacondas. And man, he is just a ball of energy. I'll tell you a funny story. So we were at I think it was the IFL, and one of the rules meetings, the referee was talking about what you can, what you can't do. Obviously, you know, violations, no biting, no eye gouging, you know, no 12 to 6 elbows, absolutely no fingers in any orifices. And Boss goes, "Hey man, what exactly is an orifice?" Boss is just "You mean people would put their fingers in there? Oh my god."
Shit.
So no, Boss is a legend, and it was a pleasure to you know, have him part of my journey and part of my career.
That's great. And what's your take on the karate combat? You keeping up with that at all?
I do like it if I have the opportunity. You know what I mean? There's so many fights now. I'm not gonna lie to you and say I watch everything, because there's just too many fights. I do love it though. I love, you know, the stand up. That is my bread and butter starting out. I'm more into jiu-jitsu now just for longevity and you know, wear and tear on the body. And jiu-jitsu is something you can do until you're an old man, and even then, and some. I love the traditional martial arts. I love the karate. It's great to see, you know, GSP and Boss Rutten teaming up there and, you know, being basically the face of the karate combat.
We have a question here that I want to ask from Christiana Landall. She's one of our black belts. If you could give your younger self one piece of advice as you were starting out, what would it be?
Ooh. You know, I would say focus on the recovery. Don't spar. You know, and I would say strategically with your sport. Like, the thing is, we say this, and you know, and I would say the hard sparring is what killed a lot of careers early. You know what I mean? And we sparred hard. We sparred really hard. All the way from when we started in London, Ontario, Tilsonburg, Ontario, you know, the Team Tompkins group, to when we trained in Temecula, California with Dan Henderson at Team Quest, sparred hard. When we were in Las Vegas training with Extreme Couture, Randy Couture's team, we sparred really hard, man. It was battle. It was big gloves 3 days a week. So I would say definitely, you know, focus on technique. And, you know, there's a lot of drills you can do rather than spar. And that's no secret. Longevity in careers now is much longer because fighters are being smarter and listening and thinking. You know, there's no need to take those unending headshots, because, you know, you only have one head. But with that, I will say, when you are starting out, you need to spar hard to make sure that you have the drive in you. You know what I mean? Before you get that experience and before you have the miles on the ring, you need to make sure you know you can test yourself. Mm. And, you know, a lot of young kids, everyone's, I don't know what you guys see at your dojos, but I find people are more hesitant. They're more, you know, cautious now. And it's appropriate. But also, when you're starting out, you got to know you can hang in there. And, you know, you got to push yourself. And you got to, you know, you can survive in deep water and keep swimming, right? So it's give and take. Do I think maybe my career would have been prolonged a little bit more? I believe so. Would I have been the fighter that I am without it? That's questionable, right? So It's all perspective.
So there's two words I want to break open there, because you've walked a path very few people have, and a lot of people are going to be interested. What does that recovery look like? Because nobody wants to take a day off. And in your heyday, what did those hard sparring days look like? Like, what did that day of training look like?
I honestly tell you, like, when we were sparring in Extreme Couture, it was a room that was stacked. And now they have a very similar thing, but, you know, like the previous generations, which was you know, Randy Couture, Forrest Griffin, Gray Maynard, Tyson Griffin, Jay Haran, Mike Pyle, myself, Mark Hominick, Sam Stout, Vitor Belfort was on the mat. We would do Shark Tank 3 days a week. So Shark Tank does nothing for your confidence. Right? Like, you are basically in survival mode. If you get out of a Shark Tank doing well, you know, your partners either took a light on you or you are just that dominant that, like, nobody can touch you, right? So, you know, I believe by doing all those Shark Tanks, you know, you know you can take it, you know you can push yourself and you know you can survive. But with that, you know, you're not building any, like, you have to build that confidence and make that confidence, you know, drive. So there's that might have been a hindrance, you know, doing the amount of Shark Tanks sure. that we did.
And explain for anyone who doesn't know, listening, what a Shark Tank is.
What is a Shark Tank? So we, you know, your fight would be 3 5-minute rounds. So you would do your 3 5-minute rounds, and every minute you would have a new partner, a fresh person. So the sessions would take literally 2 hours because the whole room would have, everybody would have a fight. And you'd get your three rounds in, and then you'd play as, you know, as the shark. First you'd be the meat, and then you'd be the shark, right? So that was definitely, like, again, I'm saying, like, do people starting out need to do that? I think so, because you got to know you can hang in there. And if you haven't competed, how do you know that you won't quit, right?
Yep. But so you're doing a full MMA fight 3 times a week with people who are fresh every single minute.
Yeah. Stupid, right?
Yeah.
But recovery, you know, I wish there was more, you know, active recovery that we were focusing on. Now I have hip problems, I believe, from all the road work that I did. You know, I have like osteoarthritis in my right hip, because I believe, you know, the tons of road work and the tons of miles that I put on the road to get in shape and to cut the weight. It's stuff that you would have done and you wish you would have done, but, you know, you live, you learn. That's what this journey is all about, right? And I think a lot of the new fighters, they're really blessed now because they can look mm-hmm. and listen, and this is a new sport. Let's not kid ourselves. It's in the grand scheme of sports, mixed martial arts is a very new sport. So when I was training, there really wasn't that much experience prior, you know, that I could feed off of. Now, you know, there's been a few generations. Athletes today, they can listen, and they should listen to what the people that have came before them have done correctly and what have they have done incorrectly and what they can improve on.
Right on. One more quick quick question about, again, someone else, if you don't mind, but my contention is that Randy Couture is the link between 90s UFC and 2000s UFC, because he's the first guy who intelligently could use his hands as a wrestler. And was that your experience moving around with him in stand-up?
Yeah, I could see that. You know, he definitely bridged the gap. He was, I'll say he bridged the gap also for, you know, starting the mega camps, you know what I mean? And one of the first teams that came out with these super camps, which was Extreme Couture, which is American Top Team, which is American Kickboxing Academy, you know, where fighters from all over TriStar Gym, Montreal, fighters from all over the world would be coming there to train and do their training camps. So like he was one of the first ones to kind of implement that and have that, you know, the super camps where people, you know, steel sharpens steel and iron sharpens iron, right? So he definitely was one of the first ones to do that. Man, his dirty boxing and his clinch game, that's what people really should remember Randy Couture for, because he was able to implement that dirty boxing and the rough and dirty style of little short trips, uppercut, short trips, elbow, you know, snap downs. That was Randy Couture, right? And he made that style work so well for him.
Yeah, no, I'm such a fan, and I've mentioned him on so many shows for that dirty boxing, because we know what a wrestler he was, but all those wrestlers in the 90s were ground and pound, and he took it to the next level, I thought. You know what time it is, champ? It's time for your 10 questions. It is time for 10 questions. This is the first show we've ever had 2 10 questions, because we filled the time and I got asked these before. So I'm really excited to be the asker this time. I was nervous earlier. Champ, what is the most effective move in your martial arts arsenal?
In my martial arts arsenal?
Yeah.
Ooh. I would say head arm triangle choke on the ground, and then, you know, I love, like, for striking was my left kick. I always loved the left kick.
Who's the most influential martial artist in your life?
Sean Tompkins.
Yeah, right on. Who do you think is the most influential martial artist of all time, and why?
At this stage, I would probably say Bruce Lee, one of the biggest names, you know, not only in martial arts, but in movies, that was able to influence people, but also his concepts of combining stand-up with grappling and groundwork was one of the original people that bring that. And as well, Hoist Gracie. So if I'm stealing too, you know, with the Gracie family and introducing the world, because it was there before, but the world got introduced to the UFC was to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
What excites you most about the next 5 years of your training?
I recently just got my black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So, you know, just to keep growing, you know, get a first degree, get some competitions in. You know, I'm a master's now, so maybe go to Master's Worlds in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But also bringing up the next generation. And that excites me, because I have a handful of guys that I work with closely, you know, Tommy Theocheras and Mikey Adams. Those are my two of my boys that I work with, and that are on the come up now. Tom in the professional, and Mikey in the amateur, will be turning professional within the next year or so. So, you know, them really excite me.
Right on. If heaven exists, what do you want to hear God say when you get there?
Ooh, nice. You did a good job down there, man. Nice work.
Do you have a favorite film and television martial artist, even if they don't do martial arts in the real life?
Do I have a favorite film with martial arts in it?
Yeah, like a favorite actor who does action or martial arts, even if they're not a martial artist.
I'll make like my classic, like growing up movie was Rumble in the Bronx, Jackie Chan. Yes. That was my favorite movie. I burned the VCR tape until I made it. I watched it so many times that it was all scratchy.
Do you have a martial artist living or dead in all of recorded history that you'd want to train with the most?
I would say right now, just because it's fresh in my mind, I would say George Masvidal. I think he's a gangster, man. He is so cool. And I just think, like, you know, retirement that I just, you know, we all watched that last week. It was tough to see him go. He was scared of nobody. And he came from a rough era, and he was always down to fight. And Kimbo, you know what? I would honestly say even Kimbo, I trained with Kimbo when he was still alive. And my coach trained him. And I would like to, you know, those backyard brawls, man. That shit, like, that pushes the limit. So I would say, you know, Game Bread and Kimbo Slice, the Miami boys.
That's awesome. And what's so legit for Masvidal is how most fighters might have counted themselves out, right? Like, he came on so late as a superstar.
Oh, yeah. And to still be competing at that high level, you know what I mean? And he didn't have a style that was a boring style. He had a style that was a lot of stand up, you know, like a lot of punches were thrown and a lot of punches were taken, and he would still be able to compete at that high level, which, you know, give him mad props for that, man. And, you know, I think he retired as one of the GOATs.
Yep. If everyone in the world could get the greatest benefit you've gotten from martial arts, whether they compete or train or not, what would it be?
Discipline. Discipline. People lack discipline today. People want immediate results. People want, we live in a world where we want instant satisfaction, and martial arts doesn't give you that. You gotta, it'll give you a high after your training, but you're not going to get good, immediately. You got to keep going, and you got to be disciplined. So discipline and the work ethic.
Our last two questions come as a pair. What is your greatest achievement and your greatest regret?
Greatest achievement. I would say the greatest achievement is the influence that I've had on people, and you know, being able to talk to people like you, and I think I've touched some lives. Maybe not everyone's life, but I've touched some lives, and that gives me some satisfaction. Regret, I have no regrets. I wish, you know, I had fought under the UFC lights at least once, even though I fought for the WC. But no regrets. It's a hell of a ride, and that's you know, the moments that you've lived through is the moments that you create right now, That's who I am, is because of what I've survived and what I've done.
Pretty badass. We have a question for you from Sensei Connery Copeland, one of our dear friends and friends of the program and the show here. Hi, champ. I'm also a fan. Kids do karate early. What age do you think is a safe age for kids to do BJJ?
6 years old. I think if they have enough attention span and the motor skills to keep them, you know, to not be a brat during class. But I think the earlier you get them in, the better, you know. And honestly, like, you can, you know, there are classes as young as, you know, 3 years old, but I think around just introducing kids, and it doesn't need to be so strict, you know what I mean? It can be a little bit more loose, but what you're doing is you're introducing the martial arts, you're introducing the structure, you're introducing the lines, you're introducing, you know, the yes, sir, the attentiveness, you're introducing that to the kids. And we should see more of that, a lot more of that.
No one on this call will disagree with that one bit. I'm so sorry that we started later with you, because we're now getting to the point where we're going around the horn to talk about our time with you, but it's been so brief. But, you know, I really want to talk to you again, and I think we all do. So maybe that's something we can figure out down the road, mm-hmm. as a way to do this. I mean, definitely in person, but hopefully on the show again. But we want to say just what mad respect we have, even for the fact you're like, nope, I'll see you guys at 9 because I got work to do here at the gym. And we all get that, and we all dig it. So we're going to go around the horn, and each of us is going to just talk a little bit about our last hour with you. Haunchy Legacy?
A lot of respect for the people at Adrenaline. I had dinner there with next door with Leo just last week. And some of the guys came over to the restaurant to say hi. That was really nice. It's good to hear your story. I haven't heard it before. I'm one of the older guys. I'm going out the other end. But it's good to hear your story. And thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate
that. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Sensei Suino?
And I'm so happy with the conversation we've had. You know, when we get fighters on here, you just never know how it's going to go. I always talk about this arc. When we see the guys who started young, you know, as confused kids, and then a lot of times we're talking to them when they're in their 60s or 70s, and they've just become just such wonderful human beings. And here you are, compared to me, at least, a much younger man, but already have that arc. You're talking about your influence on the world. You're talking about bringing up young people. I'm just so impressed by how much you talk about honoring Sean Tompkins, how you talk about classical karate as the basis of your career. Just super thoughtful answers for a fighter. So thank you so much for coming on. I agree with Sean. Love to have you back on. I think it'd be even more fun to talk in person, or maybe roll around a little bit sometime.
Appreciate that. No, anytime. Down in Always Train.
Thanks, Sensei Suino. Sensei Dofan?
Listen, champ, I'm moments in time, right? We found each other at the butcher shop. I was super excited to see you there, just be on the floor with you. I do regret, like, if I was going to do that day again, I would have walked over and introduced myself sooner and asked you to triangle choke me at some point. So that would have been good. But I also agree with Sensei Suino. I can see why you were good at 18. I feel like you were probably more mature than the average 18-year-old when you were 18. And now as a person in your mid to late 30s, you're more mature definitely than the average mid 30-year-old that I meet. And that comes with life experience, I think. But you named all the great names, and you named them with such reverence, which I really like. Like, you talked about Professor Brito, that Sean's BJJ coach. We all love him. Like, here at Cambridge BJJ, Calvin and Madison, they love him as well. John Marshall and Mike Bernardo, who obviously, like, Sensei Legacy did for Mike Bernardo what it was like second generation. He came in as a little kid into Sensei Legacy's dojo, and Sensei Legacy brought him up. And then you got that same experience as a next generation martial artist. All you guys, like you and Sam and Mark, all speak so highly of Sean Tompkins. I love it. I love the fact that you guys are keeping his name alive and keeping that tradition alive. The people you fought on the cards with, like, you know, I kept writing names down, like Carson Gracie and Stefan Bonner, like, rest his soul, right? Like, what is so cool that you had those experiences as such a young man. A word that you said that I really, it just jumped out at me was, it was a privilege to start so young, right? A lot of people think it's a right, like, oh, it's an expectation. And you say, no, it's a privilege to start so young. I love that, right? It is a privilege. The life we're living is a privilege. Again, your reverence for history, you know, sitting next to Bob Sapp, I can't imagine you as a lightweight sitting next to Bob Sapp. Like, you must have been about around the same size as his arm or something. But again, I forgot that you fought Cowboy Cerrone. I love that guy, man. I'm such a big fan of his, and even more so now that I know that you mixed it up with him. Tell your young self, focus on technique. All of us do that. We should tell all the young people, focus on technique. Shark tanks, man. I mean, I've done shark tanks before. I've done lots of them, but not with the people at Extreme. I mean, that's the next fucking level shark tank for sure. Right. You live, you learn. It's such a simple statement, but it's so true. Right. You said that you live, you learn. I love that. Bruce Lee, you're right. He's one of the original MMA guys, right? One of the original people who is like, let's do all this different. If in 5 years you're going to the Masters Worlds in BJJ, I can't wait. I'll be screaming for you for sure. Like, I'll be screaming and yelling for you. It's funny for me to think of a scratchy VHS tape with Jackie Chan and you jumping around and watching that over and over again. I love it. No instant gratification in martial arts. You got to be disciplined. These are just truths. Like regret that you might not regret it. I regret that you weren't in the UFC. And I'll bet you if we talk to Dana White, he regrets it too. Honestly, you know, some people say it's their loss. I would say it's the UFC's loss that you didn't fight in the UFC, not your loss. I don't know that it would have made you greater. You're still great. Like you fought in, you're such a great martial artist and such a good competitor. I think it's the UFC's loss, not your loss. That's my opinion. Thank you so much for coming on here tonight, champ.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you very much.
I just want to say, you know, like we have so many guests here who are older and have a sense of deep knowledge, and you possess that same sense of deep knowledge. Since they talked about that with this maturity, and it makes sense when you describe your journey and traveling around and fighting on those cards and how you take for granted your 12 undefeated first fights. Like that's a whole lifetime right there for some fighters. And then that's not even, you know, your story. That's just a little piece of it. And that explains why you know what you know, and whatever you're going to learn, you're going to learn. But I always enjoy chatting with someone who's possessed of themselves in that great way. And I love that we have, you know, that jits coach in common. And when I talk about, you know, that whether you think about it this way or not, I do, you know, your karate grandfather, that kind of thing. It's awesome. I love the links we all have in this province and as fighters, and we might follow different paths with it. And I love hearing about yours. The last word goes to you.
Guys, thank you so much. It's great to be here. I'm thankful that you guys invited me out here. And you know, thanks to Leo Laux for, you know, he really pumped me up. He's like, oh, these guys are great. And no lie in that. Like, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much. And it's a pleasure to be able to talk to you guys tonight. And anytime you guys want me back, I'm more than happy to speak.
Yeah. We're going to do a topic with you, champ. We're going to figure out a topic where we just dig into something for an hour, and we'll reach out to you for sure to find that topic.
Awesome.
Sensei Dofan, you want to tell us what we got coming up before I do some thanks?
Yeah. So coming up on the 20th, we're not having a show, but we have a show to release for you. It's one of the ones that we have in the can. And then on the 27th, we're going to be talking to TJ Williams, who's unknown to me, but I'm really excited to be talking to him. And then the thing that's coming up that I'm excited about, and I'm not going to release all the details on it yet, but we're coming up on our 100th podcast. Our 100th podcast is coming up, and we've reached out to a couple of big names. One might allegedly be on this call right now. And yeah, we're going to have a good show for the 100th episode. That's what's coming up, Sean.
Thanks, Sensei Dofan. And I want to thank, as always, Mike Russell, Andre Sedeshev, Justin Shea, Dan Holland III, Robert Schlumsky, Jesse Vlevitao, Alden Adair, Sydney Dofan, and Josh Kitchens. They run the show behind the scenes. They let you know what's going on. They keep the system flowing. They are the oil, and we're grateful for them. And we're grateful for all of you tuning in. And I didn't talk about it tonight, but if you're on that podcast or if you're on that YouTube, hit subscribe and like, share it with your friends. We really appreciate it. And if you're here live, we really appreciate it because you are part of the jam tonight. See you soon, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, champ.
Good night.